Welcome to Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest. First, 13 things. Here are surprising innovations from World War I, collected by Jacopo Della Quercia in Reader's Digest. Number 1, Daylight Saving Time. The idea of fiddling with the clock has been around since antiquity, but it was not until World War I that governments around the world officially adopted daylight saving time. Why? To conserve resources, such as fuel, and extend the workday for the war effort. The Germans and Austro-Hungarians did it first in the year 1916, and the Allies followed shortly after. To clear up confusion about the concept, the Washington Times used a comic strip to explain the first quote-unquote spring forward in the United States in 1918. Number 2, wristwatches. Timepieces known as wristlets were sold during the 19th century. However, they failed to take off with men until World War I demonstrated their superiority to pocket watches in battle, particularly for military leaders who were coordinating precision attacks. By the war's end, an entire generation of young men either had a wristwatch or wanted one for Christmas. Number 3, blood banks. Blood transfusions date back to the 1600s, but doctors rarely performed them before World War I, when they were accomplished by transfusing blood directly from one person to another. Captain Oswald Robertson, a U.S. Army Reserve doctor consulting with the British Army, recognized the need to stockpile blood before casualties occurred. In 1917, he helped establish the first blood bank on the Western Front. Number 4, Hollywood. With so much of Europe in the line of fire, the European film industry had to scale back dramatically. That opened the door for the Americans. Hollywood was still in its infancy, but its studios soon made fortunes producing wartime propaganda. The war itself provided material for countless movies in the 1920s and 30s, including Wings, the winner of the first Academy Award for Best Picture. Number 5, trench coats. While Charles McIntosh invented weatherproof outerwear about a century before World War I, Burberry and Aquascutum modernized the design to keep British officers warm and dry. Today, many trench coats, yes, that is why they're called that, come with flaps and rings that were originally created for securing pistols, map cases, and even swords. Number 6, zippers. Originally known as a slide fastener, the zipper wasn't mass-produced until World War I, when the U.S. military requested them for flight suits and money belts, which were a necessity for U.S. sailors because their uniforms didn't have pockets. Number 7, women's suffrage. Suffragists had won victories throughout the Western United States by the year 1917, but their support for and involvement in the war effort advanced their cause considerably. With the endorsement of President Woodrow Wilson, the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified in the year 1920. Now we're at number 8 of the 13 surprising innovations from World War I in Reader's Digest, disposable sanitary pads. Made from wood pulp, the Kimberly-Clark Company's quote-unquote cellucotton became a staple in military hospitals as a more absorbent and less expensive alternative to cotton bandages. When the war ended, the company's executives learned that Army nurses had used cellucotton as sanitary napkins, and an affordable new product was born. Number 9, plastic surgery. World War I left thousands of men scarred and maimed. British Army surgeon Harold Gillies and his colleagues performed more than 11,000 operations, mostly on soldiers suffering from facial wounds from gunshots. Gillies was knighted for his efforts and ultimately became known as the father of modern plastic surgery. Number 10, drones. It's hard to imagine drones in the skies just 15 years after the Wright brothers' first flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Nevertheless, when the U.S. Navy tested the first Curtiss N-9 aerial torpedo on March 6, 1918, unmanned aircraft became a reality. Alas, the nation would have to wait almost a century for drones that could deliver pizza. Number 11, soy dogs. In 1918, in Cologne, Germany, Mayor Konrad Adenauer applied for a patent for his novel way of preserving meat, mixing sausage with soy flour. Although not strictly vegetarian, the method had staying power. Soy products are now a multi-billion dollar industry in the United States alone. Number 12, Pilates. After World War I broke out, circus performer Joseph Hubertus Pilates was interned for being a German national. He used the time to perfect an exercise routine he developed that involved rigging springs to hospital beds, according to the Pilates Foundation. Today, millions of people practice Pilates in studios around the world. And finally, number 13 of the 13 things, surprising innovations from World War I in Reader's Digest, modern passports. In hopes of restoring tourism throughout Europe, the League of Nations issued guidelines for uniform passports in the year 1920. The standard documents were to include a cover embossed with the issuing country's name and coat of arms. The same basic look they have today in most every country, including the United States. Next from Reader's Digest, from the Department of Wit, Four-Wheel Dives. Roz Warren is a librarian, a writer, and the editor of the humor collection When Cats Talk Back. Here she is from HumorOutcasts.com with Four-Wheel Dives in Reader's Digest. Have you ever noticed that with some friends, when they offer you a ride and you get in their car, the first thing they say is, "Sorry about the mess," even if the car's interior is so antiseptic you could perform surgery in there? On the other hand, I've been in cars that more closely resemble the inside of a hamper than a vehicle, and the owner doesn't seem to notice. Maybe it's because I grew up in Detroit, but I believe that the condition of your vehicle says something about you. Is your car the mobile counterpart of the kitchen junk drawer, an area designated for chaos, a place to speed away from responsibility? Or is it a sanctuary from the chaos of your home, your job, your family, a self-contained space where order is easily attained and maintained? After all, cars are all about escape, starting with that first solo drive out of your parents' driveway and into the world. So I recently asked my Facebook friends, is the inside of your car clean and tidy, or is it a disaster area? Here are some of the more telling examples from my personality driving test. And there are 12 bullets here. Number 1, I have 4 dogs, one of whom is chronically car sick. You really wouldn't want to get into my car, unless you're a dog. Number 2, I keep a duster in the door pocket and use it at lights. And I shake out my floor mats once a week. There's nothing wrong with that. There isn't. Number 3. I divide people into those who brush off my passenger seat and hop right in, and those who grimace, then get in with a look of determination and pity. Number 4. I always carry lots of bottled water just in case I break down in a desert, even though I live in Philadelphia. Number 5. If I ever disappear due to foul play, the cops will easily be able to trace the last 6 months of my life from the junk on the floor of my car. Number 6. My car is spotless. I just wish the rest of my life were this beautiful and well-ordered. Number 7. I think of my car as my pocketbook on wheels. It contains everything I need for daily survival. Number 8. Food wrappers, books, thermoses, coffee cups, sunglasses, jackets, blankets, troll doll in a nurse uniform, emergency apocalypse backpack, flashlights, hair ties, reading glasses, newspapers, receipts, grocery lists, stuff for Goodwill. Number 9. We call my husband's car Meals on Wheels because he has stashed so much snack food in it. Number 10. Last week, I found a squirrel in my car. Number 11. I'm a teacher, which means my car is full of school supplies. If times get tough, I'll just sell pens, markers, and construction paper out of my trunk. And finally, number 12 of four-wheel dives in Reader's Digest. My husband has stashed an axe under the driver's seat of my car. Yes, an axe. Next from Reader's Digest, some feel-good stories here, some everyday heroes. First, a pair of stories from Andy Simmons of Reader's Digest. The first one, The Mama Bear Instinct. Angela McQueen has a routine when she's on lunch monitoring duty. The longtime math and phys ed teacher at Mattoon High School in Mattoon, Illinois, keeps an eye on the hundreds of students in her charge by walking laps around the school cafeteria. In September 2017, McQueen, then 40, had finished only one lap when a 14-year-old freshman standing not far from her pulled out a gun. "Oh, crap," she said to herself. "He's going to start shooting." School employees had been trained on how to handle active shooters, attack their ability to aim. So, with the shooter's finger on the trigger, McQueen lunged at him. Grabbing at his arm, she forced the gun barrel into the air, but not before he got off a couple of rounds, striking one student in the hand and chest and grazing another. As students ran for the exits, McQueen subdued the shooter with help from the school resource officer, who disarmed the student and took him into custody until police arrived minutes later. Afterward, McQueen went outside to dole out hugs and support to her shaken students. "It's the mama bear instinct," she told the local newspaper, the Pantograph. "I don't have kids of my own, but these are still, quote-unquote, my kids. You're not going to do this to my kids." And so, thanks to McQueen, a story that has played out tragically at far too many schools across the country had a relatively happy ending. If it hadn't been for her, the situation would have been a lot different, Police Chief Jeff Branson said at a news conference. The one seriously wounded boy was released from the hospital soon after the incident, by the way. As one impressed student told CBS News, "Ms. McQueen is Chuck Norris, basically." The second story from Andy Simmons in Everyday Heroes here's Dog's Best Friend. Jarrett Little was road testing his mountain bike outside of Columbus, Georgia, when his riding partner, Chris Dixon, stopped suddenly. Something in the distance moving among the trees had caught her attention. It turned out to be a sandy-colored 5-month-old Great Dane mix. He was really thin, ribs showing, and had a lot of road rash and a broken leg, Little told CBS News. The cyclists fed the friendly pup and shared their water. They also quickly realized that the dog was coming with them, although they had no idea how. They were more than 7 miles from downtown and riding bikes. "We couldn't leave him," Little told the Ledger Inquirer. "Out there, next to the Oxbow Meadows, he was going to end up as alligator food." Little, a 31-year-old brick and concrete business owner, had an idea. He carefully picked up his new friend and slipped the 38-pound dog's hind legs into the back pockets of his cycling jersey. Then he draped the dog's front paws over his shoulders. "He was injured, so he wasn't trying to fight," Little says. "He was also happy that we were there, touching him, and hadn't taken off on him." The trio's 30-minute ride into town ended at a bike store, where they got more water and food for the dog. That was when Andrea Shaw, a corporate attorney from Maine in town on business, happened by. The dog made a beeline for her, licking and, quote, loving on her, unquote, says Dixon. Shaw was smitten and, after learning what had transpired, declared her intentions. "I am keeping this dog." Shaw called him Columbo after the town where they'd met and scheduled an operation on his leg. Today, Columbo is living the high life on the farm with a horse, a pony, a 6-year-old boy, and 2 coonhounds to keep him company. As Dixon told the Ledger Inquirer, he is literally the luckiest dog alive. And our final everyday hero, a 4-year-old boy discovers that compassion for the less fortunate can produce superhuman results. Claire Novak with The Caped Crusader in Reader's Digest. Austin Perrine is not your typical superhero. Oh, sure, he looks the part with his signature cape flapping against his blue shirt. He has an arch nemesis, as all good heroes must. He even uses a catchy name for his heroic alter ego, President Austin. But two things set this caped crusader apart. His adversary is not confined to the pages of a comic book. President Austin's foes, hunger and homelessness, are very real. Also, he's only 4 years old. Our hero's origin story started this past February in the Perrine family living room in Birmingham, Alabama. Austin and his father, T.J. Perrine, were watching a program on Animal Planet about a mother panda leaving her cubs. "I told him that the cubs would be homeless for a while," T.J. says. Austin didn't know what homelessness meant, but he was sad and wanted to know more. Seeing this as a teachable moment, T.J. took Austin to the Firehouse Ministries, a local shelter that provides housing, food, and other services for chronically homeless men. As they drove by the red brick building, they saw a group of 25 homeless men standing on a street corner. "Dad, they look sad," Austin said. "Can we take them some food and make them smile?" That day, Austin used his allowance to buy each man a Burger King sandwich and handed the food out himself. Seeing what their presence meant to the men at the ministry, Austin and TJ returned the next week. Austin again dipped into his piggy bank to buy sandwiches, which he handed out along with his new catchphrase, "Don't forget to show love." After he returned every week for 5 weeks, word of Austin's acts of kindness spread through social media and national news outlets. Burger King jumped aboard, agreeing to donate $1,000 a month for an entire year toward the cause. Soon, churches and shelters across the country began inviting Austin to come distribute food in other poverty-prone areas. He'll have visited at least 15 locations by the end of 2018, including Skid Row in Los Angeles and parts of Puerto Rico affected by Hurricane Maria. Whereas before Austin and TJ could feed 25 to 50 people at a time, now, thanks to corporate and community support, they can feed 800 to 2,000 people at once. But Austin isn't just filling bellies, he's improving the lives of those he meets. On that first trip to Firehouse Ministries, TJ and Austin talked to a man named Raymond, who was estranged from his family. The respect Austin bestowed on 41-year-old Raymond touched the man, and he shared with TJ just how grateful he was to be treated so considerately by a 4-year-old stranger. Raymond and TJ kept in touch. With help from TJ's mother, Audrey Perrine, who worked at the Alabama Department of Transportation at the time, TJ helped Raymond collect all the credentials he needed to get a driver's license. The license helped Raymond get a job, and with money in the bank, he was able to rent his own apartment. All that was made possible because a little boy took the time to care. Austin's passion has now become his family's calling. After raising money through a GoFundMe page, Audrey established the Show Love Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to fighting homelessness. She now serves as president, and TJ left his job as a project manager for a hospital chain to oversee public relations for the foundation full-time. He's in talks with the city of Birmingham to secure the red brick building where it all started. Firehouse Ministries is moving as the site of their own shelter, which would offer medical and mental health care as preventive steps against homelessness. As for President Austin, he continues to give out food, smiles, and his inspirational message of love. He says, "It makes me feel like I'm saving the day." Next in Reader's Digest, the Genius section. Here's Unfreeze Your Brain. Can you use a box of thumbtacks, matches, and a candle to attach a candle to the wall and light it? Step one is to jettison tired thinking patterns, which derail even the most intelligent among us. Leonard Mlotnow from the book Elastic with Unfreeze Your Brain in Reader's Digest. In life, once on a path, we tend to follow it, for better or worse. What's sad is that even if it's the latter, we often accept it anyway because we are so accustomed to the way things are that we don't even recognize that they could be different. This is a phenomenon psychologists call functional fixedness. This classic experiment will give you an idea of how it works and a sense of whether you may have fallen into the same trap. People are given a box of tacks and some matches and asked to find a way to attach a candle to a wall so that it burns properly. Typically, the subjects try tacking the candle to the wall or lighting it to affix it with melted wax. The psychologists had, of course, arranged it so that neither of these obvious approaches would work. The tacks are too short, and the paraffin doesn't bind to the wall. So, how can you accomplish the task? The successful technique is to use the tack box as a candle holder. You empty it, tack it to the wall, and stand the candle inside it. To think of that, you have to look beyond the box's usual role as a receptacle just for tacks and imagine it serving an entirely new purpose. That is difficult because we all suffer, to one degree or another, from functional fixedness. The inability to think in new ways affects people in every corner of society. The political theorist Hannah Arendt coined the phrase frozen thoughts to describe deeply held ideas that we no longer question, but should. In Arendt's eyes, the complacent reliance on such accepted quote-unquote truths also made people blind to ideas that didn't fit in their worldview, even when there was ample evidence for them. Frozen thinking has nothing to do with intelligence, she said. Quote, it can be found in highly intelligent people, unquote. Arendt was particularly interested in the origins of evil, and she considered critical thinking to be a moral imperative. In its absence, a society could go the way of Nazi Germany. Another context in which frozen thinking can turn truly dangerous is medicine. If you land in the hospital, it's natural to want to be treated by the most experienced physicians on staff. But according to a 2014 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, also known as JAMA, you'd be better off being treated by the relative novices. The study examined nearly 10 years of data involving tens of thousands of hospital admissions and found that the 30-day mortality rate among high-risk patients with acute heart conditions was a third lower when the top doctors were away at conferences. The JAMA study didn't pinpoint the reasons for the decreased death rate, but the authors explained that most errors made by doctors are connected to a tendency to form opinions quickly based on experience. In cases that are not routine, the expert doctors may miss important aspects of the problem that are not consistent with their initial analysis. As a result, although junior doctors may be slower and less confident in treating run-of-the-mill cases, they can be more open-minded with unusual cases. Fortunately, psychologists have found that anyone can unfreeze his or her thinking. One of the most effective ways is to introduce a little discord to one's intellectual interactions. Consider a study performed about half a century ago. The researcher showed two groups of female volunteers a sequence of blue slides. In both groups, he asked each individual to state the color of each slide. In the experimental group, he had planted some actors who called the color green rather than blue. Whom were they fooling? Nobody. The experimental subjects ignored the deviant responses. When their turns came, most of them answered blue, just as the control group had. Then the subjects were asked to classify a series of paint chips as either green or blue, even though their color lay between those two pure colors. Amazingly, the people who'd been in the experimental group identified many chips as green, while those from the control group called the same ones blue. Even though no one in the experimental group had been convinced by the actors before, their exposure to the earlier misidentification had shifted their judgment and made them more open to seeing a color as green. Other experiments have shown that dissent can not only sway us with regard to the issue at hand, it can also thaw frozen thinking in general, even in contexts unrelated to the original discussion. What this all means is that, as difficult as it can sometimes be, talking to people who disagree with you is good for your brain. So, if you hate conspiracy theories and run into someone who believes that we faked the moon landing, don't walk away. Have tea with him or her. It can broaden your thinking in countless ways. Four ways to think outside the box. Here is a sidebar. In addition to being open to dissenting opinions, here are some techniques that could help broaden the way you think. Number one, change environments. A disruption in your everyday life may provide the force needed to alter the direction of your thinking. For some people, small changes might help, like reorganizing your desk or taking a new route to work. Whereas for others, some more upheaval, like a new job or divorce, is required. Number two, look as if you've never seen. A Zen Buddhist concept for approaching even routine situations as if you were encountering them for the first time, quote-unquote, beginner's mind allows you to remain open to new experiences despite any expertise you may have. For instance, when you brush your teeth, take a moment to look at the toothbrush as if you've never laid eyes on such an object and notice its color and shape. Think about the flavor of the toothpaste and notice how your mouth feels as you move the brush back and forth. Number three, vive la différence. The mere presence of individuals from different backgrounds with different points of view in your everyday life creates an atmosphere in which people can better respond to change. And number four of how to think outside the box, shift into positivity. Unlike negative emotions that trigger specific reactions, for example, fear propels us to flee, positive emotions prompt us to broaden our attention, explore our environment, and open ourselves to absorbing information. Take a few moments to think about the things in your life that are going well and for which you are grateful. This will automatically brighten your mood and free your brain. Let's conclude this edition of Reader's Digest with news from the world of medicine. First, early diners are healthier. A study of more than 4,000 men and women in Spain found that people who ate their evening meal before 9 p.m. or at least 2 hours before going to bed had a 20% lower risk of breast or prostate cancer than those who ate after 10 p.m. or went to bed soon after eating. These cancers may be bolstered by disruptions to the biological clock, and meal timing impacts sleep cycles. More research needs to be done to confirm the link, but it's worth noting that studies have already shown that eating dinner earlier can help you maintain a healthy weight and sleep better. Related to that, the 16-8 diet works. In a small study, researchers at the University of Illinois at Chicago recruited 23 obese participants to spend 12 weeks following a type of intermittent fasting called the 16-8 diet. In the 8 hours between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., participants could eat as much as they wanted of any food. However, for the remaining 16 hours of the day, they were only allowed to have only water and other calorie-free drinks. Compared with a control group, the 16-8 dieters consumed an average of 300 fewer calories per day, lost 3% of their weight, and saw a significant drop in their systolic blood pressure. One reason may simply be that the 16-8 diet is easier for more people to maintain than other types of intermittent fasting. And that's it for this edition of Reader's Digest. Thank you for listening. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.